Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my very good friend, my former boss, my mentor, my guiding star, my north star in all things, Bill Crystal.
So nice of you.
Some might say woke Bill Crystal.
Oh, good. So is that
these are now on the merch store? This is real. So you can now get these in the store. Go to thebulwark.com. Find the little store icon. My favorite Bulwark t-shirt ever. Ever. It's so good.
Better than JVL is always right. I can't
believe Even this. Better.
It's nice of you. It's nice of you to
Even
say.
Even better.
Nice of you to say, but lacking credibility. Okay. Anyway, good to be with you. And
So you, just very quickly, housekeeping. We are coming in 2 weeks to Springfield, Ohio. The show is actually in Dayton, I think. This is a benefit show to raise money to help all the Haitian community on the ground there. If you are anywhere nearby, come and join us. Go to thebulwark.com/events. It's important. Okay. Bill, you are in Boston. You just did a show with Sarah on her book tour yesterday. I've done two shows with Sarah so far, and next week I go to Seattle to do another one. How did it go last night?
It was great. It was at the First Parish Church and right outside at Harvard Square, right across the yard. It's the church that George Washington went to in 1775, though then there was a slightly different location about a block away. It was the same stage. This is kind of amazing. So they moved to this church, the First Unitarian Universalist Church. They split off the Congregationalists or something, so they're the First Parish of the Unitarian Universalists. And then there's also a First Parish, of course, of the Congregational Church. Kind of interesting. And lovely old church, though. As I say, it goes back to 1833 or something, the building. And Ralph Waldo Emerson spoke from the same stage that Sarah Longwell and I were sitting on.
No kidding.
In 1837, he gave that kind of famous speech. I think it's called the American Scholar speech, where he announced the liberation or urged the liberation of American literature from English. You know, we should stop imitating our cousins overseas. We need to be a proud country on our own. And I've read this thing and read that speech in 40 years, but I mean, I think it's famous among historians of American political thought and literature and so forth. Anyway, that was the same stage. They hadn't been, yeah. So this
That's
is,
really
so
cool.
Now Emerson is the second most important person to appear on the stage of the First Parish Unitarian Universalist Church in Cambridge, and Sarah Longwell is the first. Now it was a great, 600 people showed up. It's a funny mix, not a funny mix, but it's a book talk. I mean, I've been on book tours and I've asked people about books, you know, they've written on book tours, obviously. And I've been at Bulwark events, which is explicitly a Bulwark-sponsored event, which this isn't. This
right.
was hosted by the Harvard Bookstore. And it's a funny mix of the two, right? But some of the people are there just to learn about the book, which is great. And most of the people there, to be honest, though, it was like being at a Bulwark event. I don't know, did you find this in New York, too?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a Bulwark show. These are all Bulwark people. They were there just to be around Sarah and to support her. I mean, really, that's what it is. They were showing up because they love Sarah and they wanted to show up for her. Yeah, it was great.
They tolerate you and me, so that's good. And
yeah.
You came up several times last night. And Sarah uses you as her foil, you know. JVL thinks everything is unbelievably dark, gloomy, hates the American people, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I'm optimistic and I'm cheerful and I'm a nice person. I weighed in on your side a couple of times. I said, you know, let's not overdo the niceness and the optimistic. I did say at one point that Sarah had said something about how Democrats need to be killers. You know, that she learned that from her Republican days. But then she's so optimistic and cheerful and happy throughout that she is the most optimistic and cheerful killer I've ever met.
One of the things I've changed my mind on over the years is, you remember the old, was it the Buckley line about, I'd rather be governed by the first 100 names of the phone book rather than the Harvard faculty lounge or something. I think that's wrong.
Well, it's funny. I thought of mentioning this last night. It didn't come up.
Absolutely wrong.
Well, it's wrong in one way and right in a way. It's wrong. Yes, I agree that the Harvard faculty, the first 100 names is no better necessarily. That was a kind of fake conservative populism from 1960,
right,
at least,
I would say.
Having said that, it really reminds us, and this is the theme of yours, it reminds one of the case for real liberalism. We don't want to be governed by either. We want to be living in a free society, you know, where there's a rule of law. Of course, the majority rules in some sense and sets policies, but we really want the constitutional limits of the rule of law. That's something I always believed that, but it's been so strengthened for me, obviously, over the last 10 years. But really, as I've grown older, just a kind of core liberalism of, you know, let's have a society where people can live the lives they choose to lead without hurting others, and a stable rule of law so we can become better off. And
a technocracy where the people like running things are representing the, you know, the will of the people, but in a mediated way. You know, like populism is bad, actually.
Right, and the whole system was set up this way, and America did a pretty good, had a pretty good run with this kind of system, which was constitutional democracy, separation of powers. The last 80 years or so, a civil service that had some expertise mixed in, obviously, and subject ultimately to democratic control. And yeah, we sort of have gone off that path in the last decade or so. And we were going off it, to be fair, a little before that, too. So
yeah, I think that's true. Okay, so we are going to taste the 25th anniversary of 9/11. We're going to talk about, a little bit about 9/11 in the back half of the show. We have to talk about how things are spiraling out of control in the Middle East as of today. I want to start with a little bit of just raw politics. We had J.D. Vance night last night at the Republican fake convention in Dallas. Do you have thoughts? I did not watch it. You know, Tim has a thing about Donald Trump's voice. My thing is about J.D. Vance's voice. I detest him so much. I can't. It's irrational. I don't know. Yeah, but I've always hated him. I hated him when people on our side thought he was a good guy, and I knew he was a phony then, and I hate him just as much today. And so I have to read his speeches. I can't listen to that guy.
I can't listen to either of them. You and Tim are both right, and you're not wrong to detest him. He's really horrible. I mean, the degree of demagoguery, just a kind of, you know, it's not worth getting, and phoniness obviously is beyond control. But didn't Trump? I didn't watch anything. I mean, luckily I was with Sarah, and then we had a bite afterwards, and Susan was there. So yeah, I managed to have a good excuse not to watch, but also I wouldn't have anyway. And it's too painful, you know. And yeah, but Trump come back and sort of try to steal the show again? So that was kind of amusing. Apparently Vance got a mediocre reception, sort of ushered off stage. He tries to hype the crowd up, but kind of not really hyped. He's ushered off. Great. Trump shows up. Hoopla, everything, the whole thing closes with Trump and music, and J.D. Vance is nowhere to be seen. So that's kind of amusing. And I believe it incidentally confirms the point I think you and I have made, which is it is not clear at all that Donald Trump wants J.D. Vance to be a successor or that J.D. Vance can be Donald Trump's successor. So that's wildly overstated, I think, by conventional wisdom.
Yeah, I mean, I genuinely think the most important figure in all this is Don Jr., and if JD can keep Don Jr. on his side, then that is the most important thing he can do to become Trump's successor, because Don Jr. is the obvious, you know, the obvious alternative. And he's got to prevent Don from wanting to take the job from him. And if he can convince Don to be whispering in his dad's ear, they're like, no, JD, he's okay. He's okay. He really does love you, Dad. Then, it's the inside game. JD, this is the other thing. Trump is a fake. He's a demagogue and a populist. And he's a phony in lots of ways. But also, like, he's a genuine populist in that, like, you can stick him on in the middle of a wrestling ring at WrestleMania, you know, in WWE world. And he knows how to connect with the crowd. And, you know, he likes eating his McDonald's and guzzling his Diet Cokes. J.D. Vance is like a creature of venture capital Peter Thiel world.
Right.
He is not a genuine populist. It's all fake.
Right.
There's nothing real there.
Yeah, it's all fake with so many of them. But I think Trump's fakeness is more real than Vance's fakeness. I mean, I very much agree on Don Jr. It's still, you look at that and you think, is Trump, are we so sure Trump's not going to run again? Obviously, it's been a theme of yours, but I am not sure of that, A. B, I'm not sure that he doesn't try to anoint Trump Jr. And C, I'm not sure that, I don't know, someone like Hegseth, right now, I would bet, I don't know who I'd bet on to be the nominee, but this notion that Rubio is the second most likely to advance, I think is ludicrous. Ridiculous. I think Hegseth is more likely to be the Republican nominee than Rubio, if it comes to it. Hegseth is more like Trump. I mean, he's an unbelievably shameless demagogue, but all the idiotic manosphere stuff resonates, I suppose. I mean, he's losing wars, so that's probably not helping him. Though, who knows? I mean, in Trump world, they're so far removed from reality at this point that one wonders, yeah, who pays the price
Tucker.
For what? Yeah, Tucker.
If Tucker runs, Tucker wins.
Yeah, because he's anti-war, And as Vance is trying to indicate, but Vance is, it, like in this respect, Vance is playing politics from 15 years ago. I'm subtly indicating that I, by leaking stories, that I've been getting briefings that Iran wasn't going well and weighing in privately with Trump. And then I give a speech and I say something, well, people will differ on the war, but we need to, you know, work together. He thinks that that's enough. If people are going to be anti-war, people are going to be, are going to want Tucker-level anti-war sentiment. They're also going to want Tucker-level anti-Semitism and so forth. And yeah, it could easily go that way, or some other person like that, right?
And it's not going to please Trump either.
Right.
Like, well, that's, Trump is not going to sit there and be like, yeah, it's okay for him to distance himself from me a tiny bit in a, you know, two steps removed sort of way. No. Like, for Trump's perspective, you got to be with him.
I mean,
all the way.
Who can he be sure will sustain the grift and not, you know, go after him and all of his allies and also the others. I mean, this is something I've sort of been obsessed with. I mean, that it's not just Trump now. We're now dealing with hundreds, maybe thousands of people in this administration who are unbelievably determined to keep power in 2028. That's why the election subversion stuff is so serious, somewhat serious in 26, but mostly serious as a predicate for 28, I would argue. And then, and A and B, who would actually take power. If you put those two things together, they can't let the Democrats win and they don't trust anyone much outside their own circle to keep it going. And those, to put those things, those two things together, and the notion that we're going to have a normal, quote, Democratic Republican primary seems a little ridiculous. Trump's going to have massive thumbs on the scale. And the notion that we're going to have a normal, unfortunately, you know, free and fair election is also worrisome. So, or at least the prospect of that is in doubt. So it's going to be a hell of a 2 years.
It's going to be very, very strange, and not least of which because Trump is going to delay saying fully and definitively, I'm not running, as long as possible. And this is a dynamic which has never existed before since FDR, right, has never existed before in American politics, where you have a president openly toying with, but I might actually try a third term. And so don't you, other Republican person, declare that you're starting your exploratory committee, because that is a blasphemy. All very bad. But can I ask you about the $5,000 Trump dividend? I lost my mind over this yesterday and suggested that actually Democrats, if they win the House, they should pass this and send it to him. And, you know, then they should take credit for giving people the $5,000 and let Trump and Republicans take all the blame for all the bad things that would happen afterwards. Is that a terrible idea? It's a little nihilistic.
Yeah, it's even one notch more nihilistic than I'm willing to be. But I mean, that's not crazy to at least toy with it. I mean, it's certainly dwell on it. I read somewhere.
Hell, make it $10,000.
Well, that's the thing, right? Yeah. Only for people who vote Democratic, though, so it'd be like Trump's, you know, only if they, yeah. So the, it's so insane, and it is desperate. And I did read somewhere that none of the other Republican speakers has mentioned it. So they're not idiots in a way. I mean, if they thought this was something that God knows that all of his other demagogic things, they're happy to echo and amplify, right, and even go further. And if they didn't mention this one, I got the sense that maybe there was some quick overnight polling, or at least their instinct is this seems too crazy even to the base they want to turn out. So it just feels, God, the whole Trump, I got to say, those 2 days in Dallas reading Sonny's account of it yesterday in our newsletter and reading about it a little bit, it just seems like desperation. And I'm the last person to, you know, want to assume everything's going to be great. And Trump has seemed desperate before, and that idiot thing at Madison Square Garden just before the election in 24, okay. I thought, well, they're not going to win with this kind of craziness, and I was wrong. So I don't want to put too much stock in this, but it just feels that way to me. And Trump, I just read the little thing maybe for the newsletter this morning. Trump's thing, pretend I'm on the ballot. I mean, pray for it. Also, let's join together. Didn't he make people raise their hand? It was kind of an oath or a prayer or something like that, or pledge that they would go vote, so help them God. And I mean, crazy.
If you don't vote, you're going to hell.
That's it. That's a good line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Right. Well,
it's in 2 Corinthians. Yeah.
It's in 2 Corinthians. Did you happen to catch? This was funny. We, I think Tim and I did this for a take the other day. J.D. Vance was being interviewed by some Christian podcaster, and he was asked to rank on a scale of 1 to 10 how sure he was that he's going to heaven.
Really?
And J.D. Vance is like, I'm a 7 or an 8.
These people are not serious Christians, if I could say if I could say, not that I'm one to go judging who's a serious Christian and who's not. It's not my thing, but not my world. But yeah, pretty astonishing, right? Vance loves pretending to be. He and Rostov that have long discussions about this a lot.
Yeah, very, you know, very serious, because they're great public intellectuals, Bill.
Good point. Good point.
Okay. And overnight, everything has gone to hell in the Middle East. So this seems to be genuinely bad. We are getting a bunch of intelligence sort of it being admitted now before Congress about the true state of our big forward naval base in Bahrain. It turns out to be quite bad. The Iranians seem to have launched very successful attacks yesterday on, the Iranians and or their proxies on a Saudi pipeline, as well as tankers that were under escort by American warships on the Oman side of the strait, which is supposed to be the corridor that we've basically cleared out. We're going to talk about the implications of all this in a minute, but that's going to be on the other side. Bill, as you know, this is the Secret Podcast. It's one of the few things that we ask people to pay for, because we do almost everything that we do for free out in the open. Come and join us on the other side to talk about how everything is going to hell. How's that for a pitch?
It's crazy. Yeah.
Everything's going horribly wrong. Don't you want to pay to listen to people talk about how horribly wrong it is? Don't you want to join this group? Come be part of Bulwark Plus.